in the cleansing of the Gundicha temple, there's a pastime in Lord Chaitanya's Leela where prior to the Jagannath Rath Yatra, for Lord Jagannath to leave the temple, ascend to this huge, several story tall cart, huge cart, to go to Gundicha. Before he leaves the temple, gets on the cart, there's this cleansing of the Gundicha temple where he will go. And after cleansing the temple, they cleanse it again. So we're doing the same thing. Mantras for purification. More mantras for purification. More mantras for purification. Squeaky clean. Om apavitro pavitro va.
Om apavitro pavitro va.
Sarvastam gato piva.
Sarvastam gato piva.
Yasmaret pundarikaksham.
Yasmaret pundarikaksham.
Sabhaya abhyantara suchihi. Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. There were so many mantras we've just chanted, I'll explain that one. And not all the other ones, because there was not time. Om is a bija mantra, invoking, calling the Supreme. Om apavitro pavitro va. So pavitra means purified, and then the opposite, apavitra. Whether purified or not purified. Sarva vastam gato piva, having passed through, you name it, all circumstances of life. Just this one thing. Yasmaret, smarana means remember. One of the stages of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu, smaranam. Smaranam, yasmaret, by remembrance of pundarikaksham, the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord. Sa bhaya abhyantara, one becomes free from all types of fear. And one becomes suchi, inside and outside, by cleansing, just by remembering or calling the names of the Supreme Lord. Then Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. This mantra is a standard Vedic mantra, which is part also of our means of purification, or it's indicative of our means of purification, where the primary means of our purification, according to our Vedic scriptures, is particular for this age, calling upon the names of God. Now, it's not that calling upon names of God is specific to this group or that group or another group. It's a fundamental principle found in all religious scriptures. The Bible has that notion, hallowed be thy name. The Islamic religion has that principle, the calling of Allah's name. Whenever visiting India, I'm reminded, because of the practice, they don't have laws about how loud you can put amplification systems, so it 5:07 in the morning, Allah, and then, you know, many prayers and Allah. So calling upon God's holy name, whether people want to hear it or not, 5 o'clock in the morning, is part of it's a principle. By this invoking of God's holy name, calling and hallowing and praising God's holy name, then one's heart or one's soul becomes cleansed. Suchihi. Whatever one's prior condition. So what's previously needed, what a priori has to be there? Is there some precondition that has to be there? No. Anyone in any condition of life can become purified by this process of calling upon God's holy name. In our tradition, we have what we're doing this evening is Harinam Diksha. Diksha means initiation, and Harinam, chanting of the holy name, name of Hari. Hari is one of the many names of God found in the Vedic literatures, that it means the Supreme Lord, or specifically, He who takes away all inauspiciousness and puts in its place all auspiciousness. So in case you have something that you find in your heart that is not really what you'd like to be there, chant Hari. And that which is inauspicious, by that spiritual potency, the potency is there to remove that which is inauspicious and leave in its place, because it's already there. That which is auspicious is already there. There's a very nice... I'm going to share a few nice teachings of from our scriptures, and specifically as explained by Lord Chaitanya. The natural condition of the soul in its purified state is love. That love condition is covered by starting with forgetfulness of our natural condition and our relationship with the Supreme, and in its place layers of forgetfulness of thinking happiness is, and fill in the blank. And according to the Vedic literature, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, the soul is transmigrating, searching for happiness in one of those layers or some combination of them. Brahmanda Brahmite Konya Bhagyavan Jeev. Jeev, the living entity, is wandering and wandering and wandering in up and down in various species of life, searching for that lost happiness, forgotten happiness, and that consciousness can be awakened. Guru Krishna Prasadi by Bhakti Lata Beach, when one receives the combined mercy of Krishna, God, and his representative, his loving devotee, who extend this opportunity. And if one is very fortunate, one gets that opportunity. And if one is even more fortunate, one takes the opportunity and nurtures that opportunity that's been given. The Bhakti Lata means the lataza means creeper. Like, not exactly a plant or a tree, but like a vine that grows alongside something, a creeper. Bhakti Lata Bija, the seed of that creeper of devotion, that by the chanting process and hearing and chanting process, it's like watering of that seed that then sprouts and continues to grow through the watering process and has spiritual power. The Bhakti Lata, the spiritual devotional creeper, can pierce the coverings of the universe, enter into the spiritual sky, repose itself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in the kingdom of God, and manifest the fruits and flowers of that creeper in the form of love of God. So Krishna Prema, love for Krishna, according to our Vedic literature, it's in the heart of every living being. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karaye Udoi. It means, it's Bengali verse, it means perfection up to the highest stage is already something that we have within us. And that something is dormant, just like a seed. You can go in the kitchen, it's probably a bag or a jar of mustard seeds or mung beans. They're just sitting there in a jar or a bag. But you take some of those mustard seeds or mung beans and put them by the window, little sunlight, little moisture, not too much, and that seed will start to germinate. Until you do that, it's just dormant. It'll stay as seed for a long time. But it can be germinated also. Little water, little sunlight, and it starts to grow. And boop, little shoot comes out. And two little leaves. This, what you can experience is practically by germinating or making shoots, like sprouts, happens with a bhakti. It's a metaphor like that, but it happens the same way. It's already in a seed-like state, dormant, and it can be awakened from the dormant state to the awakened state by the process of hearing, specifically hearing spiritual sound. Because spiritual sound acts in the same frequency as the soul is. The soul and that spiritual sound are of the same nature. When little childhood experience, growing up, I never played piano, but I had three sisters that liked to play piano, so our parents got a piano, and from time to time, I saw it two or three times, they brought in a piano tuner. I was like fascinated to see. I didn't play the piano, but I was fascinated to see, how's he going to tune this piano? So he had this big case, you know, and I was like checking it out, opened up the wooden case, and then inside there's like all these tuning forks. In case you don't know what a tuning fork is, it looks like a U-shaped thing and comes down with a rod that you hold on to. And so it's like of different frequencies. You know, C, F, D. So then he has a little rubber mallet. Like, you know, a handle and a rubber ball at the end, rubber mallet. And he would take, you know, the C and hold it by the right key and hit it. And when you hit the tuning fork, it vibrates. And he didn't place the tuning fork on the key, he held it by the key. So as the tuning fork would vibrate, the string, because it's close to the same frequency, would vibrate. And there was supposed to be, I don't know how to say this, there are ways to say it. You know, the if it's in tune, it makes like these little nice harmonic spaces where it vibrates in an even way. If it's not in tune, don't be lined up properly. So he'll tighten or loosen, you know, hit the rubber mallet to the tuning fork, hold it by that particular string. And that way is it the same frequency? Because the tuning fork is right, is the string right? And then, okay, that one's okay, and then take out the next one. And that's how we tune the piano. Similarly, spiritual sound vibration acts in the same way. We're the string, and then the sound of the holy name is the tuning fork. And when the tuning fork is vibrating, when the sound of the holy name is vibrated, it resonates with the same frequency, with the quality of the soul. The spiritual quality of the soul becomes awakened. Or it vibrates. It resonates. It doesn't even, like the tuning fork, doesn't have to physically touch that string. You just hold it near. He was explaining, because like a little kid just said, hey, what's that? And he was explaining. So the sound vibration touches the heart or touches the soul by vibrational method. And the awakening of the dormant consciousness of the soul, spiritual consciousness of the soul, takes place because of that sound vibration. So there's another method for the mung bean or the mustard seed or the whatever it is you want to sprout. This is through sound. Vedic process is through sound. And by receiving the sound, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, or the names Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayana Namaha, Om Govindaya Namaha. By hearing names of God or Allah, names of God, by hearing that sound vibration, dormant spiritual consciousness awakens, provided it's a genuine tuning fork or a genuine name of God, not something that we, by convention, we like make up or something. But in this descending fashion, names of God are revealed, and in these other verses that we sang, not only the name of God is revealed, Govinda, one of his names, but the whole of the spiritual world, as spiritual consciousness becomes awakened and illumined, then all of that becomes accessible because it's already within. It's within the seed, and the seed was within the heart, and it's awakened by hearing spiritual sound vibration, properly vibrated and properly received. So this is spiritual initiation. That's part of our process for recognizing in a formal way that Krishna has presented this knowledge in a descending manner to, just like the Brahma Samhita prayers to Lord Brahma. Brahma in turn passed it on to his son Narada. Narada passed it on to his disciple Vyas, etc., going down, down, down into cyclic succession to our present time. And that same sound vibration has been passed on through the cyclic succession. This is a term that's very important for our Vedic process, not only for our Vedic process, for any process of genuine spiritual reception. The message remains unchanged from generation to generation. Very, very important, and the sound vibration is repeated. There's a little children's game that's sometimes played, that a little slip of paper is given to a child, or adults can do the same thing, and what they're supposed to do is secretly tell it into the ear of the person next to them. Don't tell anybody. And then he in turn tells that message to the person next to him, and you go around the room, and then what comes out at the other end is something that's so different than what you started with. They call it the telephone game or something like that. You know, that's how rumors get started and things like that. It goes on in this world. With spiritual sound vibration, this process, one of the primary responsibilities of those who receive this message is to no editing allowed. Just like it goes on exactly as it's been heard, and you simply vibrate the same sound. And vibrate the same sound, and it comes out the same at the other end. So through this process of disciplic succession, the message that is found in the Vedas, these ancient Sanskrit literatures, written down 5,000 years ago, and previous to that, not written, but present through oral tradition, because people had the capacity to hear and once and remember. We don't. We have the capacity to hear, write something down, and make our best effort to repeat it. Therefore, Vyasadeva wrote the Vedas, but previously it was just sound. And that sound vibration, according to the Vedic wisdom, existed before the creation existed. I'll say that again. Before even creation exists, God exists. And along with God existing, there's knowledge, spiritual sound vibration. According to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord creates. And along with creation, he sends this spiritual sound vibration. And there are some qualified persons called rishis who have good receivers. Just like where we're sitting right now. Somebody has their cell phone on and someone who calls you, hope you have it in a vibrate mode, but if not, it's going to ring. But it's not just that signal, but there's television signals and radio signals and all kinds of signals that you don't pick up unless you have a receiver, right? But if you have a receiver, then you pick them up. So rishis are those that have receivers. Good ones. Very refined, subtly refined receivers for spiritual sound vibration, and then they vibrate it. And this rishi speaks this portion of the Vedas and that portion of the Vedas. And through period, course of time, others can also realize, if they have good receivers, the same message, because it's an eternal message. And then that's manifest, or the essence of it is compressed within the sound of God's name, because everything, God is the source of everything. Within His name, there's everything. There are nice descriptions of this. Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Bhinatva Nama Namino, which means there's several parts of it, but because Purna Shuddho, the name of God, is completely pure, because He's completely pure. Nitya Mukto, eternally liberated, not of this world, of the spiritual world. Abhinatvam nama namino, the name and the object named are the same. Abhina, none different. So let's say orange. The sound and the object are different. Very clear. Let's say water. I'm thirsty. Water, water, water. So the sound and the object are different. That's material. But if I say Krishna, the object and the name, the sound vibration, are the same because of the absolute nature of God. His name and Himself are not different. So if we want the association, if you want to be in a relationship with God, we call His name. And immediately He's there. They have romance songs like that, you know. I won't go into it. They call the name of the beloved, and, you know, they're feeling separation because the beloved's not there. But when we're feeling separation from Krishna, we just call His name, and He's there. He's there. Within that sound vibration, He's there. And all of His spiritual potencies are also there. Nija Sarva Shaktis. All of His spiritual potencies are present. And that's a lot of potency. Just take material potency. Take the sun. Very, very powerful is the light of the sun. It's giving life to the whole universe. And how long does the sun burn? You know, as long as the universe exists, the sun is giving off heat and light. But that's just a fragmental portion of the potency of the Supreme. The spiritual potency is far greater than the material potency, and it's everlasting. And all of those potencies of spiritual and material, everything, is within God's name. So by calling God's name, it's a very powerful process, and it awakens our dormant God consciousness. Initiation is recognizing someone who has performed that in a serious manner, for some steady manner, sincere manner, we should say, for some period of time. And by that process has awakened a clearer understanding of the soul's natural position. The soul's natural position is to serve God. Service to God doesn't mean giving up things of this world. It's a very limited conception. we can even take it further and say a misconception, but gentler is to say a limited conception of spirituality means you give things up. Like when I've spoken to audiences that are young, like this, your daughter here was making a little noise. And when kids see the devotees dressed in this way and tilak and shaved head, and we're explaining, like, they want to know, you know, what's the meaning of this mark on your forehead, and why do you shave your head, and is there some meaning to the color that you wear? They ask those questions, you know, like physical. But another physical thing they ask is, to be a member of this organization, do you have to renounce all your worldly possessions? Meaning like monastic life. Like, it's clear you guys are serious, so when you're really serious, you have to become a monk. Because that's a common phrase in our Christian society, renounce worldly possessions. And the reply that I give is, no, you don't have to renounce worldly possessions. Rather, you have to renounce the misconception that you have worldly possessions to renounce. Because everything belongs to God. So it's just, everything becomes seen in relation to God and utilized in God's service. That vision, as that vision awakens and seeing how to use various things in God's service, then there's some recognition. That's what this diksha is. It's formally, it's being accepted. It's two things. It's a relationship. In a relationship, there's two sides to a relationship. Acceptance by the disciplic succession. Initiation into the disciplic succession. And acceptance on one side and submission on the other side. And with this initiation process, there's a spiritual name that's given, just like at birth. There's a name, mother and father. You take birth of a certain mother and father, and you have that ancestry. You're into that family. And Sanskrit is known as Gotra, the family in which you are born. Mother and father. Then, by spiritual practice, there's another term, dvija. Dve means two, and ja means birth, second born, twice born. And with the twice born, there's the mother is the Vedic wisdom, the scripture, and the father is the spiritual master. And it's just because through the agency of Guru and Krishna already spoken, the seed of bhakti is given. Bhakti lata bija. And that seed is nurtured by the hearing and chanting process. And through the maturing of that hearing and chanting process, then there's diksha. There's one verse I want to share that's written by one of our acharyas explaining the process that we're just now doing. There are two things that transpire that are received. Yeah, they're given to the disciple at the time of initiation. Divyam jnanam yato dadyat kuryat papa shasangshaya. So two things are key. Jnanam means knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is awakened. Divyam jnanam yato dadyat is given. Kuryat papa shasangshaya. Papa means sin, and sangshaya means doubt. Without a doubt, all sins are removed. It's like slate's clean. And the facility for transcendental knowledge is awakened. From the disciple's side, or the devotee's side, it's submission unto Krishna. Surrender unto Krishna. Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Surrender unto Krishna and the entire disciplic succession, acceptance by them, and transcendental knowledge. the facility to access that transcendental knowledge that's already within is strongly awakened, and the reactions of one's past material involvement clean. It's like Suchihi, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. Deshikai Stattva Kovidai. The learned persons consider this process to be the process of Diksha. Tata Diksha, Tata Prokta. Deshikai Stattva Kovidai. This is what we're doing. Krishna is accepting, and there is a positive expression on the part of one who is being initiated. Krishna, please accept me. And Krishna accepts. And then that one then becomes part of the spiritual family of Krishna, along with their other family. Responsibilities are not neglected. I want to say some couple more things. Well, maybe speaking too much, but the devotees here in the St. Louis congregation, temple, and congregation members have, I know this, have a great deal of appreciation for Nancy and also her very wonderful husband. In that, at a stage of life that where you've gone through so many things, to take anew something that culturally looks so different, but the internal is not so different. It's not easy. The essence is something that's perfectly natural, and I'm happy to do this, to honor both the sincere effort that Nancy has made to make this little journey in her life to take shelter of Krishna, and her husband to support that. It takes, you know, there's deep affection and appreciation mutually between husband and wife, and that's the it's beyond. Otherwise, something would have broken. It's beyond just the external. It's something that's very a deep affection and appreciation for one another. Because the growth, spiritual growth, doesn't change the nature of the relationship, husband and wife. It's not give it up and become a spiritual person. It's see that in relation to one of my services to Krishna, one that's very dear to me, the service to Krishna, is husband caring for the wife, wife caring for the husband. It's a wonderful service to God. To do that in a religious way, it's wonderful. And if it's not done in a religious way, it can be very difficult at times. So I wanted to honor and appreciate that. For in both of you, thank you very much for supporting your wife in this activity, and we have certainly been very supportive of husband and wife relationship, continuing in those duties as spiritual consciousness, God consciousness, Krishna consciousness awakens. One last thing I wanted to say here is the essence of Krishna consciousness is, we were discussing this afternoon, it's a home in the suburbs, but the essence of Krishna consciousness is not in the ritual, like, you know, here's, you saw it, there was like just an empty floor, and then all of a sudden there's all this stuff in the middle of the floor, and it's, you know, part of our ritual. But the essence is not the ritual. The essence is something else. This is part of, there is a ritual involved in what we're doing, but the essence isn't this. The essence is establishing a relationship with God. And it takes this form, that form, another form, and it's quite okay, this form, that form, another form. The essence is establishing a relationship with God, reawakening that, strengthening that. When I started taking, I was a college student, and when I started taking interest in Krishna consciousness, I was finishing my undergraduate study and going on to medical school, and I started, it's a long story, don't want to go into too much personal stuff, but the United States government wanted me to go off to Vietnam and fight in the war. And I was getting 1A notices in the mail. And I thought, gee, that's silly. Why do they want to take somebody out of medical school and send them off to that silly thing in Vietnam? I mean, besides the thing is silly, destructive, but why take somebody out of medical school? So but they were sending these 1A notices, so I had to respond. So I started thinking, what am I going to do? And somebody suggested, well, you could fill out a conscientious objector form. What's that? It's a form that says, the United States government says, those that are drafted to join the army can state their religious conviction such that they cannot take part in the armed forces of the United States of America. Well, being a dean's list student, getting 8 exams is a piece of cake. So you just get the form, fill it out. But I didn't have the answer to my satisfaction. I could give an answer and get an A, but what's my conviction in God? Like, you know, that's pretty fundamental. I didn't have an answer that would satisfy me. And so I did a little time out and, wait a minute, I don't have an answer to my convictions. And I know what's ahead of me, like medical school and internship and residency and then practice. And like, whoa, you know, when am I going to have the time to like sort out what my convictions are? So I'm taking a time out here and started searching. And as I was searching, fast forward, and one of the things that I encountered was chanting God's holy name. I found it really powerful. So I wanted to do that some more. And along with the chanting of the holy name, then I found teachings. And I found the teachings answered more questions than anything else I had come in contact with. So I went, you know, let me explore this some more. Because my quest is like, what's my convictions? Not like, you know, what does this person believe or that person believe? What are my convictions? And when I went and spent some time in a temple, took a leave of absence from school and went and stayed in a temple for a while. And my parents were thinking, the first thing they thought was, it's a phase. He'll get over it. And when they didn't get over it, they went to another state that says, we better find out what this thing is. And so they did a little research. What is this thing? And the conclusion they came to was, well, it's genuine. It's bona fide. It's like authentic. Later on, one of my sisters, had a son who also did a similar thing as I did. He went to a Christian organization, similarly in Boston, as I joined a temple in Boston. And she became very concerned. What she told me was, what you're doing is authentic. This other thing, I'm a little concerned about what my son's getting involved with, because although it's Christianity, this person that's at the head of the thing is, to my perception at least, a little cultish. Like, he doesn't let my son speak with me. He thinks I'm a bad influence and all that kind of stuff. And you never did all of that stuff. You know, you came home and you visited, and you know, you're not a big letter writer, but you communicated. And anyway, so my whole family had a concern, is this genuine? And their conclusion was, it's genuine. So I can imagine persons who knew Nancy before she started coming to the Hare Krishna temple, and she started coming to Hare Krishna temple, started thinking, oh my God, what's she doing? But because it's really genuine, one who goes to the trouble of finding what is the background here, and what are the teachings, and what goes on, what's everybody do, and it's the tradition is thousands of years, very, very ancient. We just took a group of devotees to South India, and it goes back thousands and thousands of years. Same traditions, same practices. Very, very ancient, very genuine, very, very uplifting and pure. And one who contacts something that's pure, that's looking for something that's pure, feels good about it. Wow, this is pure. Let me examine this further. So, the message I wanted to share here is this is not about changing from that ism to this ism. That's not what Krishna consciousness is. It's awakening a more deeply a relationship with God where it's effective. It actually, you can affectively feel that relationship awakening and stirring. And that's a nice feeling, and nurturing that is part of the process, and initiation is formalizing that acceptance by the disciplic succession so that one can continue further in one's spiritual practice and achieve the full fruit in course of time. Love of awakening, the stage of love of God. It's primarily done through this chanting process. There are standards that we follow, and it enhances the process, but the process is the essence. That's hearing and chanting. So at the time of initiation, there are some things that transpire. We're just about to do that now. There's some vows that are taken before spiritual master and before the deities, and you know, the assembled devotees. A spiritual name is given. These neck beads are given to identify one's connection with Krishna. So there, I could elaborate, but I've gone long enough. So, time for your initiation vows. Long awaited. So can we make a little path for her to go before Prabhupada's Vyasa-san, and you can get up, pay obeisances before Prabhupada's Vyasa-san, and come back here? To you. Okay. So the vows of initiation are the following. How many rounds will you chant of the Hare Krishna mantra every day, minimum?
At least 16.
Okay, very good. And the rules that you'll follow carefully every day?
No gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating, no illicit sex.
Okay. And to the best of your ability, you'll try very carefully to follow the teaching that Srila Prabhupada has given us, yes?
Yes, Maharaj.
Very good. Your initiated name is Nandini Devi Das. Nandini has a number of meanings, but especially is the one that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur speaks of Krishna Nandini or Govinda Nandini means Srimati Radharani. Nandini can mean daughter. It's a Nandini means it's a girl's name or female name, and the daughter of, or the the energy of. So as you're Krishna conscious, as you're becoming more and more Krishna conscious, you can think of Radharani and Krishna at the same time by just your name. The practice Prabhupada has described is that by giving names in relation to Krishna or Radharani, that just by calling that person's name, one thinks of Krishna. You can think of when Lord Chaitanya showed his form of Radha and Krishna to Ramananda Roy, he then explained his identity. Although he appeared as a devotee of Krishna, he was actually Radha Krishna, and he used this very term, Nandini. He is the, not only God isn't alone, he has unlimited spiritual potencies, chief of which is his internal potency. And this Nandini refers to that, Govinda Nandini, or Nandini for short. You can think of Krishna that way. Okay, so we'll have the yajna and chant the mantras.